Diving into the book bag today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Rebecca Wee.
And I'm Don Wooten. We're going to catch up on some book reviews today on Scribble. You know, Rebecca, one of the complaints that Roald and I would regularly get on this program is you don't do book reviews. In the beginning, we would have a short interview, and then we'd review books. But then over time, as we ran into people who were more interesting, first thing you know, sure, the whole show fills up. And then we got complaints. So, okay, no complaining. We're going to do a book bag today. And I want to start with a book that costs, how much does this thing cost? It says $28. And you can finish it in an hour if you want to, but if you're wise, you'll just take it a little bit at a time. It's a collection of cartoons. Harry Bliss is the cartoonist, and Steve Martin is the person responsible for the cut lines.
He does everything. Steve Martin. Steve Martin, the fiddle player and the comedian.
And he's a great fan of art. And
yeah,
he really knows
that's
art,
right,
down to the ground.
Yep.
He's written books, movies, scripts. He's done everything. But he got to thinking about cartoons, and the New Yorker put him in touch with Harry Bliss. And they were very compatible, and so they put out a book called A Wealth of Pigeons. Huh. It's a square-shaped book, and it's full of cartoons, and they range from the thought-provoking to the hilarious.
Oh, wonderful.
And if you'd like to indulge, let me recommend A Wealth of Pigeons. I must confess that I tried to buy this, when was it? Maybe around Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Sold out. I called to see if they had it, and they says, oh, yes, we have quite a few. And then by the time I got there, they were sold out.
Wow. So did it just come out? I don't know this.
Yeah,
book.
It just came out the end of last year.
Right before Christmas. Okay.
Well, if you're going to publish a book, Rebecca, do it just before Christmas.
Right before Christmas.
But anyway, that's my first recommendation, A Wealth of Pigeons, because it's one of those simple joys. I think during COVID times, simple joys are kind of to be treasured.
Absolutely. But the cartoons in there are not theirs, right?
No.
They didn't do them.
No,
they gathered them.
Bliss did the cartoons.
Oh, he did them all.
He drew every one.
Oh, my.
And they'd work back and forth. Sometimes Steve Martin would send him an idea.
Okay.
And sometimes Bliss would send him a cartoon that needed a caption.
Nice.
And they worked together and on and on. And it's an entertaining book.
Cool.
But Wealth of Pigeons, I'm sure you can find it somewhere. And I suppose if you're not in a hurry, it might sell for less than one of those cut-rate places, but I kind of doubt it.
Yeah, okay.
Anything by Steve Martin commands respect and money.
That's true. Yes, absolutely.
What have you been up to in reading?
Well, I was thinking about this, and the first thing that came to mind is actually an essay that has, since it was delivered in 2005 at Kenyon College as a commencement address by David Foster Wallace, who was a fiction writer and a philosopher. I can't remember when I first read this, but you know how commencement addresses are notoriously dry or full of cliches and platitudes, and everybody's heard it and they just want to get on to, you know, walking across the stage. He worked with that concept, and he wrote this brilliant, beautiful, useful, it's just gorgeous. It's gorgeous writing. And the message about why one would get a liberal arts education is spot on, I think. So because we just, Augustana just graduated the class of 2020 and 2021 this past weekend because the first group didn't get a commencement ceremony. So I've been thinking a lot about, you know, how do we tell our students what we hope for them, you know, when they arrive here as first years, but then as we send them off to whatever they're going to do next. So I have taken in recent years to giving copies of this to, you know, some of my special students who I work a lot with all 4 years. And I want to just share a little tidbit of this so that people can look for it if they are interested. Unlike the one you just mentioned, this is a very small little book because they made it out of this essay and about the right size to give to your graduating niece or nephew or child. But it actually has advice that's useful. So I'll just read a little bit of it to get you interested. So this is partway through the essay. Probably the most dangerous thing about an academic education, at least in my own case, is that it enables my tendency to over-intellectualize stuff, to get lost in abstract thinking instead of simply paying attention to what's going on in front of me, or instead of paying attention to what's going on inside me. As I'm sure you guys know by now, he's addressing this graduating class. It is extremely difficult to stay alert and attentive instead of getting hypnotized by the constant monologue inside your head. What you don't yet know are the stakes of this struggle. Learning how to think really means learning how to exercise some control over how and what you think. It means being conscious and aware enough to choose what you pay attention to and to choose how you construct meaning from experience. But if you cannot or will not exercise this kind of choice in adult life, you will be totally hosed. I don't know if we still use the word hosed. It's, you know, this came out in 2005. But he goes on to talk about how students, before they've entered the real world, don't really recognize how it feels to work all day long and then have to go to the grocery store. And then you've got the wobbly cart that's making a lot of noise and the music's horrible. And, you know, the parents are screaming at their kids and all you want to do is go home and be fed, but there's nobody who's going to feed you anymore and you have to take care of it yourself. And he comes around to saying, you know, instead of standing in that line in the grocery store, furious at everybody about your discomfort, you have the option to decide that the woman in front of you who's yelling at her kid is on her way to visit her husband who's dying of bone cancer in the hospital. Or you can decide, basically talking about compassion, that we are sort of wired to complain and to think about ourselves, but that your liberal arts education should teach you to imagine the best of people for their sake and for your own. But he does it just beautifully. You have to read it yourself to get a sense of it, but it's one of the best.
That's available at a bookstore?
Yeah. It's just called This Is Water.
This Is Water.
And it starts with a little joke about that. It's just the subtext is some thoughts delivered on a significant occasion about living a compassionate life.
Well, that's something all of us could read from time to time, just to be sure. I've been there. I've given a number of graduation addresses.
Yep.
Back in the days when I was pretty much in the public eye, I got a lot of calls to give graduation addresses. And I realized the futility of it. Because I could not remember a single thing from my commencement. And I think a U.S. senator spoke, but I just wanted to get going.
Yeah, I know.
So I remember with one class, I forget which school it was, I said, you're not going to remember anything I say because mm-hmm. this is perhaps not the best atmosphere, but you have to recognize how desperate we are. You know, we, it's, you're at the end of the school year, and we're worried that maybe we haven't completed the job.
Haven't prepared you.
This is our last chance to get to you.
Yep.
So I'm going to make it easy. You've heard about the three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give you another three R's. We'll keep reading in, but we'll add reason and religion. And here's why those three things are important. And then I gave a little thing on each one of those, reading, writing, arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, reading, reason, and religion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I said, let me add a fourth one, respect.
Mm, perfect.
But the respect, you should have respect for others, but have some respect for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will find as you get older, you are the one most likely to disappoint yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you have to cut yourself some slack to keep going.
Yeah.
But remember, you deserve that respect, that compassion.
Yeah.
You deserve a little room. So along with the three R's, add that one.
Yeah. Nice.
And I ran into a guy 20 years later. He says, I never forgot what
I
you said.
I remembered it. Oh, good for
thought,
you.
You
succeeded.
Kidding me. He says,
you
no.
succeeded.
He had the three R's down cold.
Very nice. Well, the this is water just comes from his first little anecdote, which just goes this way. There are these, this is how he opened his talk. There are these two young fish swimming along, and they happen to meet an older fish swimming the other way who nods at them and says, morning, boys, how's the water? And the two young fish swim on for a bit, and then eventually one of them looks over at the other and goes, what the hell is water? So he goes on to talk about how, you know, when we're so used to something, you don't think about it, you don't notice it. Okay. But he says, this is a standard requirement of U.S. commencement speeches, the deployment of didactic little parable-ish stories. And then he says, I am not the wise old fish. And that's when he launched into it. So anyway, I have subjected my 17-year-old and my 13-year-old to this because I just think it's... it's wise, but it's very alive, and it's...
You know, when is the best time to read something? I was a great fan of Lord of the Rings,
mm-hmm.
and I was invited to teach a class of, what was it, sixth grade maybe? I can't remember. Maybe middle school somewhere, and we were talking about reading, and I said, you know, there's some things that... you're not reading now, but you'll read later. I mentioned Lord of the Rings. Oh, we've read it. I said, that's too bad. That's too bad.
You missed everything.
Yeah, I said, you should, about 15 years from now, you should read it again.
Yeah.
And you will find it's not the book you assumed it is.
Yeah.
And that's very true.
It's true with all the... best. I mean, I think it's fine that they read it that young. I'm impressed that they would. But you're right. You know, what it says to them 10 years later, 20 years later. But that's what's sort of beautiful, isn't it, about revisiting a book that you read. And then you discover that there's all this other information going on that strikes you because now you know.
Gandalf's great line, all we have to do is deal with the time we have. That's very true. The best commencement address, maybe ever, is of the guy who wrote Everything Important I Learned in Kindergarten.
Oh, yeah.
He did that little thing with his fingers, itsy bitsy spider.
Yep.
And he said, look at that. That's persistence.
No, sure.
And Rockabye Baby and the Cradle Will Fall, you're going to have problems.
Yeah.
And your life will end.
You need...
those are things. And I thought, what an absolutely beautiful speech that was.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
So that's what's been on my mind.
Yeah. All right. Here's a book that's been on the bestseller list for, I don't know, 30-some weeks, Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. Now, Wilkerson is a very gifted writer. She won a Pulitzer for her political reporting for the, I think it's the New York Times. She won a National Book Award for her earlier book. But with Cast, The Origins of Our Discontents, this is a book you ought to read if you take life seriously, whether politically or socially. You have to read this. Because we know the problems we're having with racism. But she says it's caste, like the caste system in India.
With an E at the end.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And she says, let me quote here, race and caste can and do coexist in the same culture and serve to reinforce each other. Race in the United States is a visible agent of the unseen force of caste. Hmm. Caste is the bones, race is the skin. She says further, a caste system is an artificial construction, a fixed and embedded ranking of human value that sets the presumed supremacy of one group against the presumed inferiority of other groups on the basis of ancestry and often immutable traits, mm-hmm. traits that would be neutral in the abstract but are ascribed life and death meaning.
Yeah.
She says caste is about respect, authority, and assumptions of competence. Who is accorded these and who is not? She compares India's treatment of its untouchables, Nazi Germany's treatment of Jews, and American treatment of African Americans. Each country, she said, relied on stigmatizing those deemed inferior to justify the dehumanization necessary to keep the lowest ranked people at the bottom and to rational the protocols of enforcement.
Yeah.
I'm quoting her because that's the best way, but she gets into some of the stuff is uncomfortable reading, but it's all clear-headed and well stated. And she mentions that some pundits say, why do white working classes in America vote against their economic interests? They vote for people who will do them no good. They don't intend to. They talk a good game, but they don't do anything. And she says, in fact, the people voting this way were voting their interests. Maintaining the caste system as it had always been was in their interest. And some were willing to accept short-term discomfort, forego health insurance, risk contamination of the water and air, and even die to protect their long-term interest in the hierarchy as they had known it. You ought to read this book.
Yeah.
This is an important book for our time. It's called simply Caste, The Origins of Our Discontents. It's by Isabel Wilkerson. And I promise you, it is easy to read. The beginning is a little scattered, but boy, it picks up and takes off like a great big airplane, and it soars.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So that's one I would strongly recommend.
I wanted to ask, before we go into the next one, so we decided a few weeks ago that we were going to do this. We were going to talk about books that we had read either a long time ago or more recently. And I look around my bookshelves, and there's hundreds of books that I either can't remember having read or I have wanted to read them and I haven't gotten to them because of, you know, kids and teaching. And I was looking at my shelves just thinking, there's so many things I want to talk about, but I haven't read them yet. Or I read them so long ago, I can't remember them. So how are you choosing? How are you finding what it is you want to read?
Scattershot. I just... whatever runs across my mind, or whatever I'm reading, or whatever I think I ought to read, I just picked up, I walked past a bookshelf, and it had all the books by Bart D. Ehrman, one of the most interesting students of religion, and the Bible especially, that I've ever encountered. And I saw this one, Forged. And I thought, I don't quite remember that one. So I took it out and started reading. Of course, I'm sucked right into it.
Uh-huh.
But this says on the cover, Writing in the Name of God, Why the Bible's Authors Are Not Who We Think They Are. And it is fascinating. It's not polemical, but he started out seeking the truth. In the Moody Bible Institute, as a born-again Christian.
Okay.
And the truth was everything. And as he got along, you know, I think it was Goethe said that, something to the effect that the more you learn, the more you doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And he began to realize that we accept the Bible as inerrant. Well, it's anything but inerrant.
Sure, yeah.
And it was put together over a long period of time and has been changed along the way.
Yeah.
And when you study it, you look at that, and for some people that shakes your view of religion.
Of course.
But I think it helps you appreciate what religion really is and the great service it renders to people.
Yeah, if you can have an open enough mind to be willing to, question your own, what you were taught and what you have grown up believing, because there might be another way or many other ways.
I think my way out of that box is when it comes to religion, I accept it, but I'm free to think whatever I want.
Yeah.
And I can live in those two.
In those two, places. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, you got some poetry? I mean, you're a poet. Come on.
Yeah, let's see. How about, I don't know if we'd even call these, well, these might be prose poems. But a couple weeks ago when we were talking about books, I suddenly wanted to reference this writer, Brian Doyle, and I couldn't remember his name, and I couldn't remember the title of the book. Do you remember that? I was stumbling along. So I thought, whenever we have time to do this, I'm going to do this right and give him his moment. So this book came out in, I think, 2014, and he died, I believe, in 2016 of a brain tumor pretty quickly, suddenly. But he lived and worked. I think I said that he was in Seattle. He lived and worked in Oregon. He was the editor of Portland, which was the magazine at the University of Portland in Oregon. And so he wrote, he's written all kinds of things. But this book, I don't even remember how I came across it. It's
What's the name of the collection?
The name is A Book of Uncommon Prayer.
Book of Uncommon,
Uncommon Prayer. And then underneath, 100 Celebrations of the Miracle and Muddle of the Ordinary.
Let me hear why I should buy this book.
Exactly. How about, let's do this one. So they're all titled Prayer, and they're prose, but I might call it a prose poem. They're all about one page long, and I realized that this would help my students who were trying to learn creative nonfiction or trying to learn how to create a character. So here's one. Prayer in thanks for decent shoes. Do we take them for granted? Of course we take them for granted. We don them, slip them on, shuffle into them, doff them, toss them, kick them to the back of the closet, and never, not once, do we say, oh, coherent mercy, thank you for the skins and wood and cloth that keepeth our feet from the flinty earth, that swaddleth our flippers and protecteth our toes, that allow us to wander about briskly without, tearing the pads of our feet to shreds in thorny bristle and granite dagger, and B, losing various toes to steamrollers and arrogant bicyclists and testy rattlesnakes and spinning cricket bats and such. Did we stop for a moment this morning in the silvery light of dawn and stare at our silent, battered footboats and think of the poor bovine whose skin this is, of the quiet woman who cut and hammered and built them, of the man who carted them from the place of their shaping to the spot of their sale, of the lanky boy who bent from his great height to affix them to our ancient feet and measure the comfort of that fit, and note cheerfully that they were actually on sale this week, sir. Did you know? and it goes on, but he creates, he takes these mundane things like shoes, I suppose. One is prayer for cashiers and checkout counter folks.
Give me one. We have time for one more.
Do we have time for one more? Okay. Let's do... Oh, it's so hard to choose. Some of them are extremely funny. Some of them are heartbreaking.
You got so many picked
I know. I have all these Post-its on there. Okay, we'll do cashiers and checkout counter folks because it's beautiful. Prayer for cashiers and checkout counter folks who endure the cold swirls of winter from the sliding doors that are opening and closing every 40 seconds, and who endure pomposity and buffoonery and minor madness in their customers, and who gently help the shuffling old lady in the ancient camel coat count out the right change for her loaf of bread and single sad can of cat food, and cheerfully also disburse stamps and cash along with bagging the groceries and even occasionally carting them out swiftly for the customers they know are frail and wobbly, and who must sometimes silently want to scream and shriek in weariness and wondering how it is that they are here for 8 hours at a stretch, and who do their jobs with patience and diligence, knowing the price of every single blessed thing in the store, and who ask after children and the ill among the families of their customers with honest interest and concern, and who gently refuse to sell beer to teenagers but do not make a big deal out of it and ring the manager, and who seem to me generally paragons of grace in situations where it would be so easy to grow sad and exhausted and bored. So we ask your blessing upon them in their millions around the world, and we ask that you choose a moment at your discretion and reach for all of them at once in your unimaginable way and jazz them with hope and laughter and give them a dollop of your starlight so that they will, for an instant, feel a surge of joy for reasons they know, they do not know, but we do. And so, amen.
A Book of Uncommon Prayers by Doyle?
Yep, Brian Doyle.
Brennan Doyle. Okay.
So, yeah, they're wonderful to listen to. They make you pay attention to the world differently. You know, you'll look at the cashier differently. You'll look at your shoes differently when you pull them out, you know. And I'm always trying to tell my writing students, you have to pay attention to things, and you pay attention to minutiae. So,
yeah, that's true. But it's easy not to pay attention, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's I pay attention to the clock, and we're going to slide down here. But when you were reading that poem on shoes, I think of Gerard Manley Hopkins, Nor Can Foot Feel Being Shod.
Yeah,
about
exactly.
The way shoes separate us from the earth.
Yeah.
So it's all in how you look at it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you write about everyday things when you write poetry?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that I don't even figure out what my idea for a poem is until I've focused on something and described it in detail, and something about doing that takes me somewhere. Sure. When I sit down to write about something like the travesty of homelessness or something, you know, those are the bad poems. Those come out preachy and I already knew what I was wanting to say. If I sit down to describe, you know, the fluff of whatever the trees drop, you know, sort of floating mm-hmm. along the ground, and I decide I'm going to write about that, suddenly that takes me somewhere and I discover something in it.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense to try to hit something that is real and solid. And I'll hit our theme. That's real and solid.
Yeah.
Okay, Rebecca, thank you very much. I'm Don Wooten with Rebecca Wee. We've enjoyed your company, and here's a threat. We'll be back for another edition of Scribble.